Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Text 16, chapter 25.
Aham mamabhin manotai kama lobhadibhir malai vitam yada manakshudham adukham su asukham samam aham mamabhimanotai kama-lobha-dibhir-malai vitam yadamanakshudham adukham asukham samam aham
I
mama mine abhimana
from the misconception.
Uttai
produced.
Kama
lust.
Lobha
greed.
Adibhi
and so on.
Malai
from the impurities.
Vitam
freed.
Yada
when
manaha
the mind
shuddham
pure
adukham
without distress
asukham
without happiness
samam
equipoised. Translation, when one is completely cleansed of all, when one is completely cleansed of the impurities of lust and greed produced from the false identification of the body as I and bodily possessions as mine, one's mind becomes purified. In that pure state, he transcends the stage of so-called material happiness and distress. Purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Kama and lobha are the symptoms of material existence.
Everyone always desires to possess something. It is said here that desire and greed are the products of false identification of oneself with the body. When one becomes free from this contamination, then his mind and consciousness also become free to attain and attain their original state. Mind, consciousness, and the living entity exist. Whenever we speak of the living entity, this includes the mind and consciousness. The difference between conditional life and liberated life occurs when we purify the mind and the consciousness. When they are purified, one becomes transcendental. Material happiness and distress. New paragraph. In the beginning, Lord Kapila has said that perfect yoga enables one to transcend the platform of material distress and happiness. How this can be done is explained here. One has to purify his mind and consciousness. This can be done by the Bhakti Yoga system as explained in the Narada Pancharatra. One's mind and senses should be purified. Tat paratvena nirvalam. One's senses must be engaged in devotional service to the Lord. That is the process. The mind must have some engagement. One cannot make the mind vacant. Of course, there are some foolish attempts to make the mind vacant or void, but that is not possible. The only process that will purify the mind is to engage it in Krishna. The mind must be engaged. If we engage our mind in Krishna, naturally the consciousness becomes fully purified and there is no chance of entrance into material desire and greed. End of purport.
Aham mamadi manotai kama lobhadi bir malai. Vitam yada manakshudham adukam asukam salam.
When one is completely cleansed of the impurities of lust and greed, produced from the false identification of the body as I, and bodily possessions as mine, one's mind becomes purified. In that pure state, he transcends the stage of so-called material happiness and distress. Lord Kapila Dev is laying a foundation, and upon the foundation, further understandings will be placed and established. But the foundation of the Samkhya Yoga system, here the glories of devotional service, is having a proper understanding of what the pure state of the living being is and how to attain it. Something that Prabhupada is making very clear in the purport, that he says it three times, is the soul, the mind, and consciousness, they exist. Meaning, there is such a thing as a spiritual mind. Exist is sat, as opposed to asat, which doesn't exist, or impermanent. So there's a permanent, as there's a permanent soul, and there's a permanent condition of the soul, there are functions of the soul that are thinking, feeling and willing, spiritual mental functions. So the notion that says stop the mind, well, you can't, because there's a soul and the soul has a spiritual condition, thinking, feeling and willing. So the idea of void or making things zero sometimes is likened to taking a living being, applying anesthesia, putting him in a straitjacket in a padded cell. That's very artificial. Very uncomfortable also. It is not the natural condition of the soul. But, you know, if you want to stop a problem, you can try that. Anesthesia, straitjacket, padded cell, tied person up, you can't move. And they're out of trouble now because they're not doing anything. But the anesthesia will wear off and they don't want to be in the straitjacket anymore. They'll want activity. Because there are functions. The soul is active and there's thinking, feeling, willing. So that's a path not to follow. The mind and consciousness and the soul exist. Another nice thing to note is that Prabhupada is giving a little glossary here. when he uses the term living entity, I'm accustomed to think living entity means the soul. But here he's saying living entity implies. It's included in that statement, the living entity, is what exists permanently as part of the soul. There's a mind, a spiritual mind. But it's not the one that we're too much familiar with, the material mind. Because the material mind is the repository of the misconception, false ego, Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. As the wind carries different aromas, so the mind carries different conceptions of the self. So we have experience of the wind carrying different aromas. Just hearing Prabhupada describe, the wind can carry the aroma of a rose garden, and it's very nice. And the wind can carry the aroma of a garbage dump, and it stinks. But the wind is neutral. The wind isn't fragrant or smelly. The wind is neutral. It carries something because it's subtle. It can carry something. Fragrance. So as the wind does that, the mind does that. The mind carries conceptions of the self. And what are the conceptions of the mind? Conceptions of self that the mind carries? Well, it depends upon what the mind associates with, just like it depends on what the wind associates with. The rose garden, it smells fragrant. Garbage dump, it stinks. So what does the mind associate with? Which mode of nature? What's your preference? Select from the menu. Which mode of nature do you like? And one who associates with different modes of nature carries different conceptions of life. And according to those modes of nature and the conception of life, then one is awarded a gross body to try to fulfill the desires that are associated with that body. So there's the I conception, who do you think you are, the conception of self, and from that subtle conception of self comes the body, the material elements, not only by guna, but also by karma, guna, karma, vibhagasha. Different divisions of society are created by Krishna according to guna and karma. Chaturvarna maya shrishtam guna karma vibhagasha. But certainly the modes of nature have a big role to play. And later on Kapila is going to describe, so I'll just go there and then we'll come back to this. He's going to describe how the elements themselves unfold. So the picture is the original state, the dormant state of matter is undifferentiated matter. Like it's called pradhan. It's like a big warehouse where there isn't anything separated. It's like, you know, a bachelor's house. Everything is there, you just can't find it. It's all mixed up with everything else. Somewhere I know I have my toothbrush. I don't know where it is. So, by the glance of Mahavishnu, pradhan becomes known, same substance becomes known as Mahatattva, where things start separating out. And the first thing that separates out is our dearmost friend, the false ego. And then the false ego begins mixing with the modes of nature. And according to the modes of nature with which the false ego mixes, the next element separates out. So mode of goodness, when the false ego separates, associates with, or is in contact with the mode of goodness, the mind separates out. The mode of passion, intelligence separates out. The mode of ignorance, the five gross elements separate out. And following that, the five knowledge acquiring senses and the five working senses, and separating from that further is the objects of the senses. So we're going to hear the detail of that coming up. It's very detailed. And you put all those together and you have 23 elements. Let's do the math. Mind, intelligence, and false ego, plus the five gross elements, that's eight. And then there's five and five and five. Five knowledge acquiring, five working, five objects of the senses. So what's the math? What's 15 plus 8? It's 23. Now we have, there's 24 elements. There's one missing. That one that's missing is described in different ways. Or it's cheta. Sometimes identified by Srila Prabhupada as contaminated consciousness, sometimes identified as the sum total of material ingredients, like, you know, the balance, what's left over, like, you know, the warehouse. So, cheta, contaminated consciousness, or the sum total material ingredients. So, then you have the 24 elements, and then there's this poor living entity that thinks that he's going to enjoy these 24 elements. And how he's going to enjoy is dictated by the modes of material nature and his past fruitive activities. And then he's awarded a body to try to move about those 24 elements and, you know, win the lottery. Enjoy. Get happiness out of that soup. And it doesn't happen. So what we're hearing Kapila describe here is it's like boom, 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 it's cause and effect or sequential. As soon as the living entity enters into this realm where the living entity, and again, the living entity means mind and consciousness and the soul, accepts false ego. That's a misconception of who I am. We abandon ourselves, our real identity, and accept a false identity. I am something I'm not. Like the covering of the soul rather than the soul. So there's the gross and subtle coverings, and now we have these gross and subtle coverings. That's desire. I want to enjoy. With the false ego comes this kama. And with the misidentification with a particular covering of the soul, illusory identity, comes greed. Kama, lobha. I have to have some objects in order to enjoy, because that's how you enjoy. You have to enjoy outside yourself. You can't enjoy inside yourself. That's for Hare Krishna people. We're not Hare Krishna people. We want to enjoy something outside ourselves, because happiness is out there. I need some objects. So greed. I want to get something. Let's start with money, because then money, I can get the honey. I'll get the things I want. So, fruitive activity, driven by greed, and there's no limit. So put it as a question: is there a limit? Is there a point of, I've had enough? I'm satisfied. No more. Maybe for a moment, and then you're hungry again, or you're lusty again, or you know, it's more. It's more. It's insatiable. Gyanino nitya vairina. Insatiable. Burns like fire. So, the message that Kapila's expressing is that lust and greed are byproducts of false ego and the false sense of proprietorship, or aham and mama. That's right in the verse. First two words, aham and mama. I and mine. Abhimana, from the misconception of I and mine, are produced uttai, kama, and lobha. So like that's the mama, and those are the little babies. Kama and lobha. When they grow up, the little babies are monsters. And adhibi, kama lobha, adhibi. Adhibi means and so on. I mean, it doesn't just stop with kama and lobha. It roars. It keeps going. Adhibi, malai, mala, from the impurities of the heart. So, vitam, vitam is one can become freed from them when the mind becomes cleansed. Manakshudham. And when the mind is cleansed, the happiness and distress duality are dissolved. One is no longer pushed and pulled by duality, attracted by happiness and repelled by distress. This is a fundamental notion, and therefore it's described in a number of places in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One of the nice places that I like a lot. It's similar section. Not the same, but where Brahma is describing the unfolding of the universe, as Kapila is also going to be describing that to Devahuti. But it describes, you know, the role of these subtle energies, false ego and false sense of ownership, false sense of self, false sense of possessions connected to the false sense of self. In the fifth chapter, Cause of All Causes, Sukadeva Goswami describes the illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, that is, spirit is stronger than matter, being always ashamed of her position. Maya understands her position in relation to Krishna and the internal potency. But those who are bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of it is mine and it is I. Or perhaps one more common is in Rishabhdev's teachings, where janasya moho yam aham mameti pungsang striya maituni bhavametam kayor mito hridaya grantim ahu ato graha kshetra sutata vittaya janasya moho yam aham mameti. You've been hearing this whole section of Devahuti becoming married to Kardava Muni, the importance of that protection for a woman to be in that situation. However, the other side is, it's a bad program for persons who are holding a material conception and want that interaction for the fulfillment of material desire. Pungsang Sriya Maituni Bhavametam, principally the attraction of sex. That's what the Sanskrit is, Maituni Bhavam Etam. It's the number one hit on the hit parade. since the beginning of time. That's what keeps the world going round. You know, this bug and that bug. You know, the male and female attraction of all species of life keeps producing more and more species. It keeps the living entity bound in the cycle of birth and death, and that's the mechanism for it. So, as long as that attraction, which is based upon the body, and this body attracted to that body, then it's bondage. And the sense of aham and mama iti becomes stronger. It's a trick of Maya. It's a trick of Maya. So that's what this the second canto verse is saying, that actually Maya is weak. But we don't feel that Maya is weak. We feel Maya is really strong. Maya's got a really tight hold on us. But it's like there's a biblical saying, something is strong, but the flesh is weak. What's the saying? Will is strong, but the flesh is weak. Something like that. Spirit is strong, but the flesh is weak. That's right. Spirit is strong. Ring a bell? Spirit is strong, but the flesh is weak. That's clear. So, you know, like, what that means is, yeah, I want to, but, you know, it's so hard. Because flesh, you know, the sensual attraction is very strong. Yes, I want to, but not enough, because this one is very strong. So the yoga system is designed to break through that very strong knot of material attraction. And now going back to the dynamic of Devahuti approaching her son, Kapiladeva, because Kapiladeva is qualified, he can help her do that which on her own effort she's not finding herself able to do. Even she knows theoretically what the problem is, what the solution to the problem is. The spirit isn't strong enough because of that tight knot of misidentified false ego and sense of possessions, my son, or whatever, my, and fill in the blank, the attraction to find happiness through those things which we consider to be mine. If I don't have those things that I consider to be mine, where's my happiness? I'll be bereft. I have nothing. And I don't want to have nothing. I want to have something. So there's this yoga is the linking with the Supreme, having that faith and connection with the Supreme. Although the Supreme is adhoksanja. There's aksha, which means the senses, and akshaja, sense perception, and adhoksanja, who is beyond sense perception. So the idea is to have a connection with that which is beyond your sense perception. That requires faith. Because you can't, you know, seeing is believing principle doesn't work. But it's experiencing is believing. And the principle of yoga is something one can experience. It's one of the things that people like about kirtan, even they don't know what it is. They get an experience they like. Right? Atmaramas. And then when they have that experience, you can, you know, tell them ABC about Krishna or bhakti, and nice. But there's a whole science to take that beginning experience to its full stage. Haridas Thakur, in his discussions with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, explains that in order to get the full effect of chanting, one has to have proper sambandhagyan, because otherwise one can chant and have all kinds of notions. And people do that these days. They chant and they have all kinds of notions. And it doesn't bring love of God. It brings some experience, but not full love of God. Therefore, what Prabhupada is emphasizing in the purport is bhakti is where the senses are brought in contact with Krishna and the senses become purified. The mind is brought in contact with Krishna and the mind becomes purified. When the mind becomes purified, this is the cure, then this malai, the contamination, becomes cleansed. And when the mind's contamination becomes cleansed, then this sukhasya dukhasya, the allure to seek sense pleasure, so-called happiness, and avoid contacting senses that your sensibility says you don't like. Just be freed from all of that and simply stay on the path of what's pleasing to Krishna. The senses and the mind are instruments meant for that. And when they're used in that way, we're going to hear later on, Kapila Dev explains, when that happens in the mature stage, you want some really good news? The mind dissolves. The material mind dissolves. No more. No more harassment from the material mind. How do you all? I wish I could give a mind dissolving tablet to some people. Give yourself a relief and all those around you also take this tablet. Because the mind is a harassing entity when it's not purified. It's full of all rubbish things. Like that second canto verse. One talks all nonsense. And it may even sound like, you know, intelligent nonsense, but it's nonsense. So he's laying the foundation here with Devahuti. And very quickly we're going to hear him. He does a fast forward and then he goes through very slowly. The next coming attractions as he's going to describe. When the soul is freed from this, then he can see himself. Just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Pratyaksha Abhagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartam Avyam. The process of devotional service is meant to give direct perception of the self by realization. It's not in the life hereafter, you know, something good is going to happen, just believe me. Sometime after you die, something nice is going to happen. Just stay with this. It's not like it's direct perception. When the real thing, Devahuti is hearing from Kapila, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and it's so that one can actually experience, directly perceive, not with material vision, but with spiritual acumen, one can perceive the soul, and one can perceive Krishna in this very lifetime, if we proceed in the proper manner. So he's giving here's the proper manner. He's giving the principles, and then he's going to describe in detail how. Okay. Any comments or questions? Yeah.
I have a practical question. For men, which you recommend it's best to do now.
Yeah.
Women seem to have a bad deal because they have to get married, but at the same time, it's so hard to get free from that attachment.
Yeah.
The concept of marriage.
Yeah. It's a bad deal. That comes with taking birth in the material world. We have to transcend. So that the therefore the preparation just like Maharaj was explaining this very nicely in his lecture, wedding lecture, that there must be proper training before there's marriage. Otherwise, it's quicksand. And if there's proper training, then it can be means of elevation. It's, you know, the thorn to remove the thorn. It's not that it's applied properly. But if there isn't that training, it's quicksand. It's just jump in and drown. Finished. You know, as far as self-realization is concerned. And then, you know, on the other side, oh, I'm finished. I want to give this up. But it shouldn't be out of, you know, disdain and disgust. It should be with a higher state of consciousness, having done it properly. Now I can go to the next level. That training is practically gone, you know, in speaking of the world in general. It's animal. So, it's like in the Bhagavatam, the association of man and woman, there's different metaphors. One is falling into a blind well, and another metaphor is a fortress. The fortress is if it's done properly, and the blind well is if you don't know what you're doing. Just jump in. Then you're down at the bottom of the well and calling, "Help, help," and no one hears. So one shouldn't go about this important step of life, if it is to take place, without proper training and guidance. And with proper training and guidance, one may find, "Hey, I'm very happy without it." It should be where one, in fact, is very happy without it, rather than, you know, I don't want to be responsible and deal with, you know, my circumstance of life. One should be very responsible. Anything else? Yeah.
When carrying so many misconceptions of body and mind, dealing with the angels whose conception is just primarily by hearing or purification, but misconception of self without caring. I mean, as we're hearing some misconception that makes it really challenging to hear. So how does that purification actually take place?
The quality with which one hears in an ideal, when there's ongoing submission, that hearing will improve. The removal of misconceptions will be gradual, so that one's hearing will improve. That's ideal. But what you say is true. I can go on hearing and holding on to misconceptions and just get pumped up with, now I have validation of my misconceptions and spread my misconceptions. That happens. So an ongoing act of submission in the receiving department, the receiving of transcendental knowledge, which means that one should deliberately be prepared from time to time to just hit the reset button or refresh or whatever, so that, you know, whenever the first time one reads Bhagavad Gita, there's a certain set of, okay, now I understand something about Bhagavad Gita, and you read it again and read it again, and you get fresh understandings, deeper understandings. One should be prepared to grow with Bhagavad Gita rather than hold on. Allow for the further purification to with eagerness, not allow, but eagerness to have that, just like Devahuti. She's got the theory down, and she's at least expressing in the manner that I don't have the realization sufficiently. captured by the illusory conception. So it's a gradual process. And the act of submission must be ongoing act of submission, not a one-time or an occasional event, a condition of life. Did you know the problem?
Lord Kapila is responding to the devotee's questions.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically to remove attachment. Is there a specific...
And to take her to the... To the desires and the attachment that goes with those desires. And to carry her to the other side.
Is there a specific attachment that she is asking relief, or she is speaking generally by being in the material world?
Yeah, she's not as specific. No, all those desires, what we're hearing in this verse is, my dear mother, those desires that you have, they're connected, they're rooted in false ego. And with false ego, sense of possessiveness of those things generated from the bodily conception. On this side, anyway? Yeah?
My question is, there's contemplation of the level of the mind. There is contemplation on the level of the mind.
Contemplation on the level of the mind.
Although we may not be acting on it.
Although we may not be acting on it.
So how do we avoid such tendencies?
Act on it. Practice. So the conceptions, make sure, like Jai Jagannath's question, make sure the conception that you have is accurately reflects the message that's been given as best you can. So you can double check the conception. And then bhakti means the practical activity that matches that conception. But both are required. Practice. Now even, let's say, chanting. So we encourage people, here's the value of chanting. Why don't you begin? Chant something every day. What do you think you can do? So something. And then do it regularly. Practice regularly. And so on. You have something particular in mind, or you're just thinking and asking in a general way?
I'm asking because I'm finding it
regulated. Regulated.
So I know that it's a great energy.
Well, I'm sure you've heard these. The answers I'm about to give before, and then the answer is, well, I've heard that, but I'm still having difficulty getting regulated. But take something that's reasonable as far as regulation is concerned, consider it very carefully, and then, very carefully stick to it. And related to that is, take one area in that regulation that you give special attention to. Maybe even because it's easiest, you give special attention, just accomplish that. It's an incremental message I'm giving here. And critical for regulation is rising at the same time and taking rest at the same time, so you can rise at the same time. As far as possible, be very careful with that one. So that will help your regulation with the other things that you have to do. Because if you don't do that one, then everything gets pushed off. It's out of kilter. Another one that's important for regulating is the tongue, the process of eating. What and when and how much, and with some regulation. And that will help regulate all other things. Atatri Krishna Namadi. Sevan Mukhihi Jiva Dal Swayameva Svaratida. By the one sense, the other senses become more easy to control and regulate. So the two functions, eating is one and vibrating is the other. So not just regulate your chanting, but you know, the manner of speech, how you speak. Control that one little guy in there, the tongue, and make the other senses more easy to regulate. Those are some. And after, well, I know all those things, but I'm still having trouble. So let the force of that understanding. Here's what one devotee I know, whose name I won't mention, a god brother, had a problem controlling the senses. He would binge from time to time. He was a traveling Sankirtan devotee. He described that sometimes he was trying to control his eating, but it just would go out of control. So he was on traveling Sankirtan, so he would go into a grocery store, pull out his brown thread and offer everything. It's prasadam. Go to his van and just binge out.
Cool boy.
So or it's Pandavaneer Jalakadasi, and you know, Krishna Smarana gave a nice announcement about Pandavaneer Jalakadasi. It's looked forward to by devotees. And but I remember walking into the kitchen on an Ekadasi, and it wasn't even Pandavaneer Jalakadasi, and there was a devotee in the walk-in refrigerator eating everything inside. Because he was trying like anything to, you know, follow strict fasting, and he couldn't control it. He just... So this devotee contacted the Bhaktivedanta archives, and they gave him, you know, they gave him a list of Prabhupada's lectures, and he gave him a whole one of those lists. We had audio cassettes, so one of those whole big folders that had front and back, front and back, front and back, Prabhupada lecturing on that verse. Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indriyai. So he could absorb his consciousness in Prabhupada's instructions to control his tongue, so that he could then control his other senses. So, you know, take a strong measure on this side to balance this side. But do something, work on something that's doable. Yes. And then incrementally increase, tighten gradually. You have a question? What should you do? Two things. Recognize where that's coming from. It's coming from past unwholesome contact somewhere. It's not even so important where. It's not that you trace it out, it's connected to that event. It might even be in beyond this lifetime, but it's, you know, that's in principle. And with that, it's like a 1-2. It's coming from some unwholesome contact and feeling some regret for that unwholesome contact. The next is, don't dwell on it, move on. If you dwell on it, then it gets bigger. And, you know, you can't get that thought out of your mind, although it's like, you know, an undesirable thought to begin with. So, tolerate and move on. So, you know, positively invest consciousness in Krishna thought, or something that your mind can become absorbed in relation to Krishna, chanting his holy name, something, some service that you require to do, the beautiful form of the deity, and so on. So don't dwell. Tangs to tiksha swabharata. You tolerate and move on. Regret, tolerate, move on. It's illusory. And it's just a vestige of the bad part of the illusory past. Move on. I'm not going. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur stated that a Vaishnava does not dwell in the past. A Vaishnava is always looking where they're going. They're aware of what's in the past. They're oblivious. So you take note, oh, there's this bad contact in the past. How unfortunate that I've misused my free will in such a manner. Whatever that particular thing is that's bringing this bad thought. Let me never go there again. Let me go to Krishna. And, you know, don't hesitate. Go. But you hesitate and you're still hanging out with that bad thought. Murari. A nightmare? Bad dream? So if anybody has a problem with a bad thought, just contact Murari and he'll help you out. I will. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.